Hare Krishna. So, very grateful to be here on the Vyasasan, only because of the emergency situation of Kali Yuga am I qualified to do so, otherwise not at all. So here we are. So if there's a few verses to go through to finish the chapter. Where are we? I forgot this. So my only prayer is that I might say something that is beneficial to everyone and not say anything that causes any disturbance to anyone. So I'll just finish off with English translations from the chapter The Marriage of Sukanya and Chavana Muni. So, O King, leave here and offer your daughter to Lord Baladev, who is still present. He is most powerful. Indeed, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose plenary portion is Lord Vishnu. Your daughter is fit to be given to him in charity. Lord Baladev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who hears and chants about him is purified. Because he is always the well-wisher of all living entities, he has descended with all his paraphernalia to purify the entire world and lessen its burden. Having received this order from Lord Brahma, Kakudmi offered obeisances unto him and returned to his own residence. He then saw that his residence was vacant, having been abandoned by his brothers and other relatives who were living in all directions because of fear of such higher living beings as the Yakshas. Thereafter, the king gave his most beautiful daughter in charity to the supremely powerful Baladev, and then retired from worldly life and went to Badarik Ashram to please Nara Narayan. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 3rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Marriage of Sukanya and Chavana Muni. So, and now we begin chapter 4. This is titled Ambarish Maharaj Offended by Durvasa Muni. So I'll just read the introduction as we should. This chapter describes the history of Maharaj Nabag, of his son Nabag, and of Maharaj Ambarish. The son of Manu was Nabag, and his son Nabag lived for many years in the Gurukul. In Nabag's absence, his brothers did not consider his share of the kingdom, but instead divided the property among themselves. When Nabag returned home, his brothers bestowed upon him their father as his share. But when Nabag went to his father and told him about the dealings of the brothers, his father informed him that this was cheating and advised him that for his livelihood he should go to the sacrificial arena and describe 2 mantras to be chanted there. Nabag executed the order of his father, and thus Angira and other great saintly persons gave him all the money collected in that sacrifice. To test Nabag, Lord Shiva challenged his claim to the wealth, but when Lord Shiva was satisfied by Nabag's behavior, Lord Shiva offered him all the riches. From Nabag was born Ambarish, the most powerful and celebrated devotee. Maharaj Ambarish was emperor of the entire world, but he considered his opulence temporary. Indeed, knowing that such material opulence is the cause of downfall into conditional life, he was unattached to this opulence. He engaged his senses and mind in the service of the Lord. This process is called Yukta Vairagya, or feasible renunciation, which is quite suitable for worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Maharaj Ambarish, as the emperor, was immensely opulent, he performed devotional service with great opulence, and therefore, despite his wealth, he had no attachment to his wife, children, or kingdom. He constantly engaged his senses and mind in the service of the Lord. Therefore, to say nothing of enjoying material opulence, he never desired even liberation. Once, Maharaj Ambarish was worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vrindavan, observing the vow of Dvadashi. On Dvadashi, the day after Ekadashi, when he was about to break his Ekadashi fast, the great mystic yoga Durvasa appeared in his home and became his guest. King Ambarish respectfully received Durvasa Muni, and Durvasa Muni, after accepting his invitation to eat there, went to bathe in the Yamuna River at noontime. Because he was absorbed in samadhi, he did not come back very soon. Maharaj Ambarish, however, upon seeing that the time to break the fast was passing, drank a little water in accordance with the advice of learned brahmanas, just to observe the formality of breaking the fast. By mystic power, the Rasamuni could understand that this had happened, and he was very angry. When he returned, he began to chastise Maharaj Ambarish, but he was not satisfied, and finally, he created from his hair a demon appearing like the fire of death. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is always the protector of his devotee. And to protect Maharaj Ambarish, he sent his disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, which immediately vanquished the fiery demon and then pursued Durvasa, who was so envious of Maharaj Ambarish. Durvasa fled to Brahmaloka, Shivaloka, and all the other higher planets, but he could not protect himself from the wrath of the Sudarshan Chakra. Finally, he went to the spiritual world and surrendered to Lord Narayan. But Lord Narayan could not excuse a person who had offended a Vaishnav. To be excused from such an offence, one must submit to the Vaishnav whom he has offended. There is no other way to be excused. Thus, Lord Narayan advised Durvasa to return to Maharaj Ambarish and beg his pardon. So we get a taste of what this chapter will be as it unfolds. So we can go to the first verse of this chapter 4. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, "The son of Nabag, named Nabag, lived for a long time at the place of his spiritual master. Therefore, his brothers thought that he was not going to become a grihastha and would not return. Consequently, without providing a share for him, they divided the property of their father among themselves. When Nabag returned from the place of his spiritual master, they gave him their father as his share." Purport. There are two kinds of brahmacharis. One may return home, marry, and become a householder, whereas the other, known as Brihadvrat, takes a vow to remain a brahmachari perpetually. The Brihadvrat brahmachari does not return from the place of the spiritual master. He stays there, and later he directly takes sannyas. Because Nabag did not return from the place of his spiritual master, his brothers thought that he'd taken Brihadvrat brahmacharya. Therefore, they did not preserve his share, and when he returned, they gave him their father as his share. Om Gantam Randasya Gananjana Shalaka Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Naam Vishnu Padai Krishna Prashtai Buddhade Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarvati Devi Gauravani Pacharini Visesha Shunivari Paschat Ashtani Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhanitananda Shri Avaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadigora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So it's an interesting verse to begin this chapter, which will prove to be very interesting. So in this chapter, we're hearing about the ashram, about the brahmachari ashram and the grihastha ashram. But we have to put it into perspective. In the Vedic age, when boys were maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, they would have the Upanayam ceremony and they would take the sacred thread. But only boys from the higher castes, from the higher varnas, the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaishyas, the sudras were not allowed at that time to take the sacred thread. And of course the sudras are the majority, so always it was the higher class of boys who took this. Of course, this changed in the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami. He allowed that even those from the Shudra class could take the sacred thread. So it's all about time, place and circumstance. But certainly at this point in Vedic age, this was the case. So the boys would go to the Gurukul, to the spiritual master, and they would learn about the world and about renunciation, and they would have many practices, quite austere, quite rigorous practices. And at some point, after some initial training, some boys who had more worldly, they realized they had worldly desires within them still to be fulfilled. Then they would return from the place of the Gurukul and take up family life. They take up the Grihastha Ashram, the responsibility of family and household and all that entails. But some would remain with the Guru, and they would take this vow, this Brihadvrat vow of perpetual brahmachari, Brihadvrat brahmachari, or Naishtika brahmachari. And we know of, in our lineage, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami, he was Naishtika brahmachari, so for all his life, he had taken this vow of permanent brahmacharya. So in this verse we're hearing about Nabag, who's the son of Nabag. And of course this comes from the lineage coming from the Manu, Svayambhuva Manu. Now we're, all the lineages are talked about here. So that we can assume that these are all very elevated souls who've come into the world. So Nabag, he'd returned from the ashram, but later than, he'd returned so late that everybody, including his brothers, thought that he decided to stay in the ashram to take this Brihadvrat vow of Naishtika Brahmachari. But then he appeared to the family again. So I was thinking, the difference now, in our situation now, rather than returning late from the ashram, we're arriving late at the ashram. And certainly I'm probably the biggest offender in that, having arrived at the Brahmacharya Ashram at the age of 44, which is completely unvedic. But there you go. This is the mercy of this age, the mercy of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, that even the most offending souls can, if they take to the mercy that's given, then the mercy comes. So it's all about education. Even at such an advanced age, having been, you know, most of life a grihamedi, enjoyed the pleasures of the flesh and everything else that goes with it, somehow I can be in the Brahmacharya Ashram and the association of brahmacharis. This surely is great mercy indeed. But Krishna said, you know, this is Chaturvarnyam Maya Srishtam. The four divisions of life were created by me. So this system of education of these ashrams, the four varnas and four ashrams, are created directly by Krishna. And we also know from Bhagavatam that in the beginning of this creation, that in the creation of Lord Brahma, that actually he introduced also the system of four varnas, four ashrams. Because it's the greatest educational system that can possibly exist. And so it's existed in all times and places, and it even is existing now. So the first of the varnas, the brahmanas, the intellectual class, living simply and thinking highly, simple living, high thinking, teaching others. Then the kshatriya varna, for the strong and tough, the ones who can take care, protect society from all the dangers that can affect that society. Traditionally, the warriors, the emperors, the chieftains. Then the vaishyas, those who are involved in economic practices and farming, agriculture, maintaining livelihood for the society. And then the sudras, who are in the position of just using their body and facilities as best they can to facilitate the other varnas, the other people in the society. And of course, they are the majority. And then the ashrams, the Brahmacharya Ashram, the first ashram, for education, Grihastha Ashram for family life, for bringing souls into the world, for nurturing them, for protecting them. The Vaishya, yeah. The Vaishya, the Vanaprastha, sorry, yeah. Penance, this is like for those who have passed the Grihastha ashram, passed the age, reaching about 50 years old. Taking penance, moving slightly away from society and beginning to preach, separate from the material enjoyment. And the sannyas, who is involved in preaching the truth. So these are actually the legs of religion. Education practiced in the brahmacharya ashram, charity practiced in the grihastha ashram, penance practiced in the vanaprastha ashram, and truth preached in the sannyasa ashram. So it's all about education. And why do we need education? Because we have animal propensities within us, and these need to be purified. Basically, we come into the world in a very vulnerable position, and we're carrying many desires and karma from previous lifetimes, and we enter the world with this. So all this has to be purified, so that the Brahmacharya ashram is the beginning and the most important ashram, because this is where education takes place. Particularly traditionally, for young boys, we go to the ashram, to the guru, to the gurukul, and they'd be learning about the importance of human life. They'd be learning about cultivation, cultivating their qualities, understanding the world, and preparation for the future life. So preparation for Grihastha ashram. So it's all a preparation. So without that initial education, how can one be qualified to enter the Grihastha ashram, to have the responsibility of taking care of a devotee woman and raising devotee children? And without that education of Brahmachari ashram, how can one enter the Vanaprastha stage, practicing penance and austerity? And how can one enter the sannyas ashram to be able to preach the truth to anybody and everybody? So this is the initial preparation. And of course, probably one of the most important aspects of Brahmacharya ashram is knowing how to control the mind and the senses. So this is the ashram. There would be separation from the rest of the population. There'd be an element of isolation from influences that were not particularly beneficial to the spiritual livelihood of the boys. And of course, this is also the same with the modern Brahmacharya ashram. There's an element of separation from the everyday world and from the influence of women and attraction to women, which is always there. So, and another aspect, of course, is the practice of celibacy for all the ashrams. Celibacy is such an important aspect of this education, of this training, because it allows the energy to not be dissipated. The energy can rise within. The potential of that vital energy is so powerful that this is why we see, like, devotees, everybody has shining faces and everybody's very content and happy. Whereas if you look around in the world around us, you see, like, many people, they're very kind of, like, not looking so healthy and a bit withered and everything, aging very quickly, aging very prematurely. And this is because they're not practicing celibacy. So there's many, many, many benefits. Many things have been said about the practice of celibacy. So it's a very important thing. And this gives us the incentive in the early stages of approaching spiritual practice, to give us the incentive to keep on going, because with that extra energy that's within us, we can cope with difficulties more easily. So very important. So Krishna said, Mami Vamsho Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana. So he said, even though the living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna, of the Supreme, and are actually transcendental in nature and have eternal nature, manas sastanindriyani prakriti stani karshati. So even though they have that, they're still suffering in the material world, still struggling with the mind and the senses. So this is a condition, struggling with the mind and senses, because the tendency is that we're still trying to use our mind and senses in the procedure of trying to find happiness for ourselves, contentment and happiness and control for ourselves. So this, of course, is separate from our real position as eternal servants of Krishna. So every time that we try to be happy by ourselves or enjoy by ourselves, then we suffer some kind of pain. We feel some stress and anguish, and this is because we're looking the wrong way. So this is why we're struggling with our mind and senses. But actually, Srila Prabhupada says that actually the struggle is false. It's a false struggle, because actually the struggle doesn't need to exist at all. It is a false struggle. We should actually, even in this material world, we can be very peaceful and not struggling. But we can only do that when we start to approach ourselves and how we're interacting with the world in the right way. We're beginning to control the mind and the senses. So education is essential for teaching us this. And it's also, education is also essential for protecting us against the powerful illusory energy of material nature. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopalananda Bhagavan Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshmi Hanuman Shri Shri Gonitai Shri Mati Vrindadevi Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. If we don't know, if nobody's giving us information about who we are and what our real position is, if nobody's giving us information about the material nature and how it's operating, then we're completely lost. But if we do have that information, then we're in another platform altogether. So Lord Rishabhadev, who was a great Acharya and Vaishnava in our tradition, who was actually a personal expansion of Krishna himself, Lord Rishabhadev, he said that the attraction between male and female is a basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. So this is what happens. The sense of I and mine, this is the two big problems we have. And the lower form is mine. We can see this in the animal kingdom. All the animals are fighting for it. It's mine. Like my food, my children, protecting very strongly. And the higher form is the I form, found amongst the humans. That I am so wonderful, I am so great, I can do this, I can do that. There's a great future for me somewhere. It's just a matter of time before it turns up. You know, I ultimately will be very successful in getting what I want. So these are real, as Lord Shabadev says, these misconceptions, they tie us to things like body, our home, property, children, etc. So basically, the education that comes in Brahmacharya Ashram should equip one to enter the Grihastha Ashram in the proper way, so that by that time he's ready to understand how to apply this properly. So the attraction between male and female is legendary. Many things have been written over vast periods of time. There's a great joke I heard from Gaurav Bahal joke. It's not like a joke, it's just but it's like if man, like man has written like so many volumes of trying to understand woman, you know, trying to, like talking about her beauty and her mystical qualities and how to understand a woman, you know, huge volumes have been written. But when it comes to women, women produced a single page pamphlet. Because for women, it seems that it's quite clear, you know, like it's quite clear the situation, what a man is and what he is. Whereas man seems to be, so it's just about different perspectives on the same thing. Okay, that was a joke, but it didn't go down too well. But thank you. Anyway, you get the point. So, this attraction, it's very fine and it's very wonderful and it's very enjoyable temporarily, and everybody experiences it to some extent. We all come into the world, we want to enjoy our senses, we want to enjoy these things, so they happen. But for one who's on the spiritual path, these things are very detrimental, obviously. So this is why in Vedic age, then the Brahmacharya begins at such a young age, where the young boys can immediately be taken away from the mother and the woman in society, because that influence is very detrimental for them. And again, we can see the effects in society of when there is no separation. You could speak like a 10-day seminar on the effects alone. But Srila Prabhupada also said in the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, in his purport, he said the whole material creation is moving under the principle of sex life. So sex life is the main thing. This is material energy. Everything is based on this. This is the illusion which we can either fall into and get lost in, or we can rise above. We can become transcendent too. One of the two. I was just remembering one time when we went on a Brahmachari trip, we went through one London airport and there was one huge mural on the wall, and it was like sandy beach and blue sky with clouds in the sky, like a big, big mural. And I think it was probably Chaitanya Jivan Prabhu who noticed it. Nobody else noticed it. But he said, look carefully at this mural. And sun, sea, sand, clouds, blue sky, fine. But he said, no, look closer. And he said, he pointed it out that actually the formation in the sand and formation in the clouds, it was you, it was good. Okay. S-E-X. Very, very subtle. Very, very subtle. It was there in this mural. It was fascinating. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. It was just there. So whether the person who designed that mural actually realized what he'd done, or whether it was a very subconscious thing, or whether it was deliberate, it might have been deliberate, who knows. It was there all the same, and you could see it. So all the advertising in the world, all the propaganda in the world, it's all about sex life, promoting sex life. So it's bewildering our senses. We're completely zapped out with the whole thing. Young people go into great anxiety about trying to find their position in all of this. Certainly I did. I don't want to go on this point too long, but Srila Prabhupada told the wonderful story about the Mughal emperor in 15th century India. And basically he said it was a true story about this Mughal emperor. He had many advisors. And he asked them many questions. And one time he asked one of his advisors, at what point does lustful desires finish? You know, I'm so full of lustful desires constantly. When will it stop? And his advisor said, it will stop when you take the last breath of your life. And the emperor said, no, surely not, surely not. But surely the body, by that time, it's worn out and its functions are depleted. It can't do anything anymore about that. And the advisor said, no. And the emperor said, well, I don't know if I can accept this. So almost the next day, the same advisor turned up and said, quickly, emperor, come with me, come and see. He said, there's a very old man. He's just about to leave his body. He's very, very old. You must come. And he said, but bring your daughter, bring your youngest daughter with you. So the emperor went with his young daughter, and the advisor said, but one thing, when we enter the house of this old man, look just at the eyes of the old man. So they did. They entered the house. The emperor looked upon just at the eyes of the old man, and the old man failed to observe any traditional welcoming gesture to the emperor who had arrived, but rather his glance was completely on the young girl. So the higher object of his desire was what he noticed first. So this is a lesson for us all. And at that point, the emperor said, "Yes, now I understand what you're saying," because this was a completely finished old man about to leave his body, but still his desire was, the object of desire was this young female. And he might not have been the devotee, but we also hear in Shastra many examples. Also Bharat Maharaj, who was born from such a great family, his father, Lord Rishabhadev, Krishna himself, and Bharat Maharaj, he became the emperor of the world, great opulence and great power, but great knowledge and great education as well. And yet when he left the kingdom to take Vanaprastha to go into his ashram, he was, just one day he was bewildered when a deer was frightened by a lion and jumped across the river, and a young deer, a baby deer, came from the deer and started floating down the river, and Bharat Maharaj immediately went to get the young deer, and then his life became, he became completely besotted by this young deer, so much so that he forgot his spiritual practice. So both of these examples show that whether one is very great materially or spiritually, it's very easy for material energy to get the best of us. So what about us, you know, in our position? So the conditioned souls, We are not like the great Mahajans. We're very small, tiny souls. We suffer from the four restrictions. There's Brahma, the tendency to make mistakes, Pramad, the tendency to be illusioned, Vipralipsa, the tendency to cheat, and what is it? Karana Patava. Imperfect senses, thanks. Imperfect senses. So we're walking around with all of this. We can't. Our senses are not working very well. Our mind is not working very well. Everything is kind of very inefficient in one way. So this is the position we're in. So we need help. We need help, and this comes from the teacher. And for those following a spiritual practice, of course, this comes in the form of Guru. So Brahmanda, Brahmiti, Kohan, Bhagavan, Ajiv, Guru Krishna, Prasadi Bhai, Bhakti Lata Bij. So even though through their karma, the living entities are traveling throughout the world, throughout the higher worlds and throughout the lower worlds, by the mercy of Krishna empowers the Guru, the living Guru, to come and come to be present before the living entity, who will now submit to him in all ways. He'll become a disciple of the Guru, because the Guru has learned from his spiritual teacher and has learned all the tattvas, all the truths, and now he can teach his disciple. So this is a greatly fortunate position, and there are many examples of that, such as Narada Muni, who was in one lifetime simple son of a maidservant, and just because of the association of passing sannyasis and by taking their prasad, he became the greatest acharya of all, the greatest guru. So the power of the holy name, it's not restricted to class. No matter what position one is in, even if one is in the from a family of dog eaters, it says, Yannamadeya, Shravananu Kirtanat Yad Pravanat Yad Smaranat Apikvachit Shvado Pisajya Savaneya Kalpate Kuta Punaste Bhagavan Nudarshanat. It says, even to say nothing of the spiritual advancement of persons who see the Supreme Person face to face, even someone born in a family of dog eaters becomes immediately eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices if he even wants to chant the holy name of the Lord, or hears about him, hears about his pastimes, or simply remembers him. Yeah. So I think none of us are as low as from a family of dog eaters. Although one time I was traveling through Laos, between the border in Vietnam and Laos, in a very high mountain pass, and there was a big truck full of dogs. And we said, why are these dogs here? Oh, they're for the restaurant. They're going to eat the dogs. So they were dog eaters. What a horrible sight. Sorry to come up with that one. But having seen actual dog eaters, then I consider that I've got a little bit more good consciousness than that. So, but it just, even someone in that position can end up becoming a sannyasi if he takes spiritual life, such as the power of the holy name. So we're very fortunate. So I think, like, many examples of material life are given, the analogies of being a prison, of being a hospital. But I find these very grim. Actually, to me, I think a school, the example of a school is a good example. That you have in that school, in the classroom, there's many who are just completely out of it. In our school, we used to have a table down by the teacher who were called the dunces. They were just completely out of it. They couldn't learn anything. They were just causing trouble and jumping up and down all the time. So they had to sit by the teacher. Then you had the more serious students. So it's like that. I see it in that way. You have many, many students and some teachers. So, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he in his life, he was a teacher. And, of course, he's the greatest teacher of all. The teacher knows many things, even if the teacher knows advanced trigonometry and algebra. When he's with a class of young children, he will still say that you can't take 6 away from 5. You know what I mean? So he, according to the level of the student, he can speak to nurture their cognitive abilities. But Mahaprabhu himself, he said that I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, Shudra, I'm not a Brahmachari, I'm not a householder, a Vanaprastha, or a Sannyasi. Actually, I'm only the simple servant of the servant, the servant of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who is the maintainer of the gopis. So Mahaprabhu gave this very high vision. But also, there's a truth, because he's also talking about, see, the tendency is for attachment and designations. But these four varnas and four ashrams are themselves designations and attachments. But the truth is that they're necessary for those students who need to be nurtured in the initial stages. They need that system. That's why Krishna has given that system. But ultimately, they're not necessary. So when Ramananda Roy was sitting with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu told him to speak about the purpose of human life, the first thing that Ramananda Roy said about Dharma is, yes, Varnashram system is very important. And Mahaprabhu said, yes, the Varnashram system is present among the Hindu people, and it's working, but it's very superficial. It's a superficial thing. It's not spiritual. In the higher spiritual truths, it's not essential. But like in the classroom where you have some students who really need big help, and you have some students who are already quite elevated, there's different teaching at different levels. So one last thing was that yesterday evening I was over, we have some of our cows and oxen over in a separate field about half a mile away. So they were there in the field, and I just went to check that they were okay. And in another field just beside them, there was a herd of just other cows, like traditional farm cows. There was about 30 of them. And then I was just looking at the difference between them. Like our Goshala cows, they all have names. They know their names. If I call their name, they will turn around and look at me. Some will even come. I know their different personalities, their different temperaments. And they've been hearing the Hare Krishna mantra since they were born. Think about this. They've been hearing it constantly. The cows are giving their milk to Krishna every day. But these other cows, they were completely different, and they behave in a completely different way. There were about 30 of them, and they're very, like, it's a group mentality. They're moving around like a flock of birds. So when I went to see them at first, they're like, whoa, and backing off. But then gradually I was just chanting and talking to them, saying nice things. And gradually they sort of like came as a group closer. And some of the brave ones came forward and like sniffed the hand kind of thing. That's their way of... The cow, when it sniffs your hand, it's actually realizing your state of consciousness. So when they realized I was a kind of a friend, they were kind of there, but they were still like as a group, just looking at me, you know, not knowing what to do. Because, and you think about it, their future is very bleak. I mean, in a few years, they'll be off to the marketplace, the slaughterhouse. Well, hopefully they won't be, but most likely they will. So it's such a difference between the two groups of cows. But then this is the same thing. It's the same thing again. It's some need to be really nurtured from the very beginning and taught the very elementary basics, and some already at a point of liberation where they need to be nurtured further and further into a higher spiritual state so that eventually we can reach the complete spiritual liberation where we can get out of the cycles of samsara and remain in the spiritual world perpetually. But this is all due to the mercy of Guru and Krishna. So we should, whatever position we're in, whatever ashram we're in, we should strive wholeheartedly to fully understand who we are and what our position is. And as far as Varnashram goes, well, all the first stage of ISKCON has been completed in one sense, that we have all the temples around the world, the very nice, beautiful deities, and some devotees in the temples, not as much as there were in the beginning. But now it seems like, and Prabhupada talked about it, especially near the end of his life, the importance that Varnashram would have, so that as devotees we should probably begin to think, how are we going to educate the population of the world? Because they're not getting a proper education. Oh, they're just immersed in just so much trouble, which comes from ignorance, state of ignorance, and from a state of not understanding. So many wars at the moment, so many problems. So actually we're receiving the highest truth directly from the Supreme Lord. So we must find innovative ways to move within society and try to influence on different levels. We always have the security of the temples now. The temples will always be here. But we can find some strength eventually to move out into positions in society and move in, push out the philosophy where it's needed. Yes, millions of books have gone out. Yes, they are the seed. The seed has been planted in the world from these transcendental literatures, but there's more needs to be done. But this is for the very brave who can now go out and put out the philosophy in a very subtle way into society, and the more this happens, eventually people will realize what the truth is, and more will come to live by that truth. So this is what we can do with Varnashram at this present time. So I think I'll stop there. So if anyone has any questions or comments, please offer them. Thank you.